The Helicaster Jane Show airs Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern. The podcast always available online at HelicasterJane.com. We had it all. We had it all, just like Bogey and Bacall. The lyric that has touched hearts and imaginations of generations and allowed us to sail away to Key Largo. The songwriter, Bertie Higgins, whose Key Largo blew a hole in the U.S. charts when it reached number one in the nation and went on to become an international hit. For Higgins, it was only the beginning. Today on the Helicaster Jane Show, a conversation with the man who wrote the iconic song Key Largo and has accomplished so much more, Bertie Higgins, one interesting man. Joining me at my table here on the Helicaster Jane Show in just a moment. Hi and welcome. I am your host, Helicaster Jane. But before we begin, the Helicaster Jane Show is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial today by visiting my website at HelicasterJane.com and clicking on the Audible.com icon for your free book. Hey, what's more fun than a free book? And remember, the Helicaster Jane Show is always available online at HelicasterJane.com and a host of venues, including Stitcher.com, Spreaker.com, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and on the iHeart Radio Network. Like his great-great-grandfather Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, the German poet who penned Faust, Bertie Higgins is a storyteller. Bertie, who once supported himself as a sponge diver, began his career in show business at the age of 12 as a ventriloquist. But music was in his heart, and he became a drummer for the Tommy Rowe band, The Romans. He toured the world alongside the Rolling Stones, the Beach Boys, Tom Jones, Roy Orbison, Manfred Mann, Peter and Gordon, the Dave Clark Five, and many more. Tiring of the rigors of the road and yearning to make his own musical statement, Bertie left the Romans, put down his drumsticks, and picked up a guitar and began crafting music and lyrics. And aren't we glad he did? His number one national and international hit, Key Largo, touched even the most hardened and cynical of hearts. Who was this man who wrote the song? Let's talk. Okay, buddy. So from Faust and a deal with the devil to Key Largo and tropical romance. That's a heck of a family history, Bertie. No shortage of irony there.
Sure. I was just in Munich.
Yeah?
Where Faust spent a lot. Goethe spent a lot of time. Great city. I really enjoyed it. We were shooting part of our new film there, and I went with my son and location scouting and interviewing. So, but I'm back getting ready. I just left Chicago and Nashville, and in about 3 weeks, I head to Florida. Just got back from China 2 months ago, so I've been really on the road.
You're a busy, 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 busy guy. So listen to
me. Well, it ain't boring, I'll tell you that.
Well, that's a good thing, right? I think that's a great thing. Life should never, ever be boring. Listen, you wrote one of the most romantic songs ever written, and we get that. But in just a few stanzas of your poetry, you captured something, I think, something so much more. Can you nail it? Do you know what it is that you got in that great song of yours that I don't know. You know, you listen to that song and you go someplace. Talk to me.
Well, it touches people. You know, I write lyric very easily from the heart. And there are better songs are written in Key Largo lyrically. They don't have the exposure that song had. I was going through a tough time. I split up with my girlfriend and I figured the only way to turn her around was talk from the heart and put it on the radio. And it was my first record on the radio, and she came back. And we're now at 33 years of marriage.
I didn't know that part of the story.
Yeah, that's
really?
True.
Wow.
She heard it. It's a long story. There was only one radio station playing in Atlanta. It took me 18 months when I left Tampa Bay to Atlanta to get the number one song, but I worked hard. And there was only one station playing it. It was at Gainesville, Georgia, which kind of bled into Atlanta. And one day I went and found her. She was living up there as well. And I went and found her. And I had an arrangement at 1 o'clock that the program director would play it. And he did. And we're sitting in the car. And she said, "Is that you?" I said, "Yep. I wrote this for you." She said, "My God." She said, "You know, you're a little flat on that last verse." Oh, God.
And you said...
I said, "I'll fix it," and we did. And the album version came out. It wasn't flat anymore, so I can tell which is being played on the radio.
Oh, that's hilarious.
No, but then about 2 years later, we got married.
Oh, I did not know that part of the story, and I was wondering about, you know, who, what, when, where, and why. But listen, every time I hear Key Largo, I want to fall in love again, no matter how painful a love story might end. And listen to what I'm saying to you. I want to cry. I want to giggle like a girl. That's what your song has always done to me, every time, the first time I heard it. And I hope to experience just the measure of the emotion that you got in that thing. But then I wonder, listen to me, Birdie, I wonder, who is this guy who could write that lyric? I really wonder about that. A guy could be that sensitive and that hurt to write something so profoundly honest. So, Birdie Higgins, who the hell are you? Let's start at the
beginning. I don't know, babe. I try to figure out every day. I mean, I go, I don't know. And then I write screenplays now, but there's no huge love story there. It's adventure. I even wrote a horror script. And I go, who's writing this? It's gets crazy. I mean, it's scary sometimes because I'm just the instrument. I'm just the instrument. I'm telling you, it comes through me, into my hand, into my pen, into my guitar. It's pretty. And when it's on, it's really on. I tell you.
Does it wake you up at night? Is that how it comes, or can you just sit down and connect to it, or?
Just the muse hits me, and there's a lot going on out there in the universe that we know nothing about. There's a lot in our subconscious minds we know nothing about, and I believe there are spirits watching us that love us from our past, and I believe that the DNA from Goethe, who was a late 1700s who wrote Faust, was bestowed upon me and in my generation. But there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on that we don't know anything about. So I'm just the, excuse me for being so hoarse. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know, but love it. I love it. Go ahead. Keep talking. You're whispering in my ear with that hoarse voice, and I'm getting like, uh-oh.
and humming Key Largo. Oh, my God.
I'm waiting, my friend. I'm waiting. That would be like the capper to a really lousy couple of weeks. Hum away all you want. That's all I have to say.
I've always been a passionate person. Even when I was a little boy, I knew there was something wrong or different. And I don't know. I mean...
And that's who you are. So let's go back to the beginning. You were born Albert Joseph Higgins, of Portuguese, Irish, and German descent. That explains that good-looking face of yours. Raised in the picturesque Greek community of Tarpon Springs, Florida, which anybody who comes to Florida, that's a place you ought to visit. Tell me a little bit about your childhood. How did it set you up to be you?
Very, very small town, 8,000 people. We had no money, but we got real creative. There was nothing back then. Of course, there was no computer, no games, no television. Well, kind of. But there was nothing going on, so we had to really get creative. And we did plays, and I was a water boy. I was in the ocean every day, killing fish or killing something with a spear gun. It was just an interesting time. I mean, it was like growing up in Europe. Basically, Tarpon Springs, with the Greek influence, was a great place to grow up. Plus, if we wanted a big town, we'd go shopping in Tampa, or we'd go hang out on Clearwater Beach and chase women, chase girls. It was just a great way to grow up. I just great. I can't say enough about it. We always had a great time, even though we had a lot of tragedy.
What kind of tragedy?
My two brothers. One when I was 13 and one when I was 19.
What?
Yeah, one in a car wreck and one in Vietnam.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, tragic things, but we had a big family. How my parents got through it, I have no idea. I have four children, and I worship the ground. I absolutely worship them. It's true love. Children are true love. Women,
yeah,
can be, but that love tends to go up and down and wane and come back, wane and come back. Children, though, that's true love. I mean, I'd walk in front of a train, not even think about it. Do you have children?
I do. Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking
about?
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about. No matter what they do, no matter where they go, no matter what happens, you just love. It's just pure love.
Yeah, I know.
It's just pure love. Absolutely. Except it.
Well, are you having a good time? What's going on with you, Hallie?
Oh, no, you don't. We're not going on my trip. We're staying on your trip. A ventriloquist. You became a ventriloquist. Started at age 12. You still do that?
No, I was age 12. I did for about 3 or 4 years, and I started stuttering. I stuttered for a while.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the puppet stuttered, and I stuttered, and it didn't make any sense.
That's such a hard thing to, that's such a weird thing to do, ventriloquist. Who did we grow up with? Like, Charlie McCarthy was before my time, but there was that other guy with that wooden thing. I was always afraid of ventriloquist.
My son, Julian, who's doing Vera Roa and now is a film director out here, he was afraid of it. In fact, I've got an Emmett Kelly clown doll puppet sitting up there in my leather chair in the office here. People walk in and go, what? But I was always an Emmett Kelly fan. He was Weary Willie in the Ringling Circus.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I wrote a song called Mr. Kelly, which I may re-record. I don't know. I kind of like it.
Kind of cool. But anyway, you still can't do it. But
that note down. Hold on.
Go ahead.
I've got sticky notes up here with the new album, Mr. Kelly.
Go for it, buddy.
Go ahead.
Say you do it from remembering when you're on the Hallie Kessler Jane show. I spurred you on. Listen to me.
Well, you know, like I've got so many songs listed. Plus, I'm writing new ones. I just wrote my first blues called Blood in the Water.
Oh, yeah?
That's interesting. As a shark swim round and round. It's just some great ideas that come flowing in and out.
I can relate. So listen to me. You went around, you performed at schools, right?
Yeah, then I had a little rock and roll band kind of starting when I was around 15. I was a drummer.
And you said that, and I don't want to make that clear because that's going to be important to your story. You started out with drumming, which I think is interesting. And here's the thing that I found interesting about you. First, you were doing the ventriloquism thing. Then you were playing drums at Sock Hops. Remember that word, Sock Hops? Those words? Oh, my gosh.
Ooh.
I hear a lot in that. But a kid looking for recognition, a fearless soul, and a boy with music in his heart, is that who you were? It's fascinating that a kid gets that kind of, I'm going to go and do that.
Well, I went through several changes. I was in the Army, and then I was in college and did it all. And this thing kept tugging at me. I had things I wanted to say to girls, to women, lyrically. And I couldn't do it from the drums. I did fairly well as a drummer. I was Tommy Rowe's drummer. He was a bubblegum guy who sang Sheila and Dizzy and all
that. Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute because I remember Tommy Rowe because I have a sister who's a lot older than I am.
Oh, okay.
And she used to play his stuff.
When I was 13, my mother taught me ukulele, a few chords, which is a four-stringed instrument. And when I turned 19, I finally picked up the guitar and started learning, taught myself, and then I started writing.
What about the singing?
Huh?
What about the singing?
With my band that became Tommy Rowe's backup band, our lead singer, Lanny, could play drums, so I got up a couple of songs a night in our shows and sang two songs.
That's
right now I've ever been. Yeah. I mean, I used to sing walking up and down the street because I didn't have a car, I had a bicycle, but it was stolen. And I used to walk up and down from downtown to my parents' home and just sing at the top of my lungs. And so singing came along with the guitar when I turned about 19 or 20 years old.
Was your family musical or were you the only one?
My aunt was a Tin Pan Alley songwriter who had published back in the 20s and 30s sheet music. So I guess she had a little bit through my father. My mother and father weren't musically inclined. My brother John and brother Eddie were. They're now deceased. Johnny played guitar. Eddie played drums. And then now my sisters, Charlotte and Gloria, are both guitar player singers. And they actually do little bars and things.
Huh.
So, yeah, I guess so. It's all in the family.
Do your kids get it? The kids get the gene?
Julian was in a thing at Jarvis Springs High School called Syndicated Sound, where they danced and sang. But his love, since he was in third grade, was film direction. And now he's becoming a major film director.
So I hear.
Aaron's a drummer, but Aaron now owns set design and prop company out here in Los Angeles. He's working on a feature film right now. He just did the Wendy's commercial, the Cadillac commercial. So, and then my eldest son, Damien, is really into music. He's one of the top three rave DJs in the world. He's got 14 CD albums out there, and he's a major, they call jungle music, drums and bass DJ. Amazing.
Amazing, is right.
Yeah, he started spinning in college at the University of Pittsburgh at the fraternity parties. And my daughter's the only sane one. She works for Southwest Air. I said, baby, don't quit that job because I haven't bought a plane ticket in 12 years, and I love it.
The way you fly, that should be meaningful. Listen, so Tommy Rowe, so you wind up performing backup with this guy. And for those who don't know, he did have a string of hits, what, in the 60s, I guess. Was it 60s or 50s? I don't even know. Sweet Pie.
He had Sheila.
Sheila, Disney, right.
Everybody, Oh Sweet Pea.
Oh, my favorite. I named a kitten after that song, actually.
Oh Sweet Pea. Come on and dance with me.
come on. Can I sing with you? Oh, my God, that'll be like the highlight of my month. Listen, so the Romans, that was what the backup band was called. And along the way, you had Barry Oakley came in, and I guess you replaced Joe Pappalardo, who was drafted.
Barry became the bass player for the Allman Band.
Right, exactly. Allman. So all of you guys, but this was quite a part of your career because you got to travel and to perform.
Yeah, England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales on a tour with Tommy. Had a great time, and then we signed a record deal under our own name, The Romans, with ABC Paramount Records, and we released about 6 singles. So we were pretty popular at the time. But it was great. It was a great mentoring time for me to grow. Got used to being in front of crowds, and it was a great time. But then I got frustrated because I wanted to write and sing. So there it was.
There it was. But when you toured with the Rolling Stones, Beach Boys, is this true? Is this what I read?
Oh, yeah.
Listen to some of the Tom Jones, Roy Orbison, Manfred Mann, Peter and Gordon, the Dave Clark Five. I mean, so talk to me about this because you heard so much and you were right in there with it. How much of an influence did all of that have on you?
Well, you know, it was kind of we played on the first Rolling Stones concert in this country, opening act. It was at Georgia Southern University in Statesboro, Georgia, and we were very popular there, and they booed the Stones off the stage for us.
Wow.
They were half drunk. Mick Jagger fell off the stage, all kinds of crazy stuff. But I learned a lot. But you know what?
No, what?
I was living in Tarpon, mm-hmm. Playing clubs with my old Martin guitar as a single, which was quite unusual at that time. Not a lot of people did that. And I knew I couldn't make it out of Tampa Bay. That's when I decided to move to Atlanta. But I went to a Eagles concert at Tampa Stadium one night by myself. And Jimmy Buffett was opening for the Eagles. And I stood out there in the field and I went, you know, I can do this. I can do this. And that's the following week.
So listen to me.
I moved to Atlanta.
Right, but this is
where I knew people from Tommy Rowe because he was being managed and published out of Atlanta by Bill Lowry. And I went up there, ran into Sonny Limbo, a producer, and he and I worked every day, at least 5 days a week. He worked me on writing songs. And I finally learned how to write songs that had potential to be hits.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second because there's a question I have to ask you. Okay?
Go ahead.
Here it is. There are 1,000 people who get the bug and say, this is what I want to do. There are 1,000 people who, you know, pick up and, you know, from the bowels of whatever, wind up in L.A. or wind up in Atlanta or wherever the heck they're going to go because that's where they need to do it. But for all the thousands, there are that many more who don't have the chutzpah to do it. So what gave you the chutzpah to do it? Why were you so self-assured?
I wasn't self-assured, but I knew if I didn't do it, I'd go jump off a bridge because I had to do it. See, I was born not with a monkey on my back, with a gorilla on my back. And it still pushes me every day because I work 7 days a week, either with social media, speaking to agents. I'm working on my new tour of China coming up right now. And then every now and then I'll sit down with my guitar and write, but I work every day. So it was a burn that was put on me, and I don't know where it came from.
Is it a friend or a foe? or both?
Less than 1% of all musicians on the earth attain a number one hit.
Right.
What's the toughest? It's hard. It's just, and it's very insecure. Very insecure. There's no security. So if you get enough momentum going, you can make a damn good living, which I've been doing.
But this drive that you have, is it an enemy or a friend, or is it both?
I'm in love with a bitch I can't stand. How's that?
Perfect. I get it.
I'm in
totally
love with a bitch
it.
I can't stand. I mean, sometimes I just go, whatever it is, leave me alone. They give me 24 hours, but it never does. Well, occasionally, I'll go up and watch Naked and Alone. You ever seen that movie?
Mm-mm.
I mean, that series?
No, but I'm going to go look it up now.
Hey, it's even though it's Naked and Afraid. This is insane. Every now and then, but I love to watch movies because I make movies now. I write screenplays, and I produce the movies and act in them. So my dreams are coming true. I just bought another Martin. It's all in little segments. I'm going, you know, I told my wife the other day, I said, I'm not buying any more stuff. I got everything I ever wanted, you know?
Uh-huh.
I got my little two-seater Mercedes in the driveway. Always wanted it. My son brought me a World War II German Luger pistol. Just everything that I've, all the little knickknacks. I've got more clothes than I need. I've got 40 pairs of shoes. I got to throw some of them away. I've got too much stuff, you know.
Martin Guitar.
Huh?
You were going to say Martin Guitar. You didn't mean George Martin.
Oh, no.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I've had Martin guitars before, but got rid of them. Now I've got 25 guitars. What do you do with 25 guitars?
Look at them, play them, toy with them.
Most of them still have the price tags. I didn't buy them. Some of them, they were given to me by guitar companies. At any rate, go ahead. I'm sorry to mean that.
No, I'm just loving every word. Just you know, I can stop telling you. You just keep going. First of all, I want to listen to that voice all day long. Oh, my God. But besides that, I mean, you got a story to tell, and it's a great story. I question, are you a poet or a musician first? Which?
I don't know. It's kind of, it's hard, 50-50.
Okay.
I mean, I'll conceive of a song a year today, and will not pursue it for at least 8 months or a year. Because I don't want to mess with something like simple little things. Like, do you ever have a dream of an old lover?
Mm-hmm.
And you wake up like, wow, I do that sometimes. So I came up with a simple title called I'm Dreaming Again. Or little things like something that really impressed me. I wrote a song for my daughter called Dreamer on Horseback. And I rarely listen to other music, but every now and then I'll stumble into a gem of a song. Because the Great American Songbook is dead. It's over. It's, look at the Grammys. I mean.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
In fact, we submitted my last album to the Grammys this year for Best Acoustic Folk Album. And I cut it with nothing but acoustic instruments. It didn't get nominated, but I sure worked hard on it. We're going to try it again this year.
Yeah, well, the music business is in crazy times. I don't know. That's probably a conversation we could have that could take up a whole hour.
You don't sell albums much anymore. Now we're back in where you sell singles.
Right.
99-cent downloads.
Right.
My new Chinese album, CD, is huge. Instead of 5 inches by 5 inches, the packaging is 7 by 7 inches. And it has a 20-page booklet in it with pictures and stories and lyrics. That's how it should be done. It's that the artist, I think, deserves that.
There's a difference between you, the artist, than Joe Schmo. Joe Schmo might have the dream and then walks around the rest of the day trying to figure out, why did I have that dream today? You don't do that. You have to spit it back out in some creative form.
Well, you know, it comes as a gift.
The dream or what you spit out, which is, or both?
The inspiration for it. I mean,
okay.
It comes through the ether. It comes through your subconscious.
Right.
It comes from God. It comes from a gift. And I believe if you don't pursue the gifts you're born with, then you're going to have a miserable life. It's like when you're on your deathbed, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I go to North Africa and become the archaeologist I always wanted to be and dig in the dirt? Well, damn it, go do it. And people are going to suffer around you. So but you know what?
What?
You got to be true to that gift. You must be, or you'll be one miserable guy, a girl.
So then the question, here comes the next question, which is, you got fortunate because luck is part of it and fortune is the other. We both know that, you know. And you could make money doing what you do. But to those artists who are out there who, you know, or whomever, if it's the guy who wants to be the archaeologist who goes over to, you know, Africa or Israel or something and digs. But what about money? Because money is a reality. And if you can't make money doing what you do, then that's where 95% of the people give up because they go, I can't figure out a way to make this work. What do you say to that?
Surrender to it is what I say. Damn the torpedoes, damn the money. I mean, there are people out there living in cardboard boxes down in L.A. here that they're making it. It depends on how important this is to you.
Right, right.
I believe you've got to honor the gift.
Such a beautiful way to put it.
And so what? I never did it for the money. I did it because I had to do it. And the money, even today, still flows nicely. I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm not a multimillionaire. But I never did it for the money. I did it because I was given the gift to do it. And I've always believed that you must leave more on this earth than when you arrived in a positive way to help, to mentor, to do charities if I can. And I just did one in China for handicapped Chinese children. But you got to give it back. You've got to leave more here.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah. And beyond children and some sort of damn retirement, a check that you're secure of having, living in Sun City, Florida, even though I may end up there, but it's still a ways down the road. Gotta surrender to it. You gotta be Clint Eastwood said it well. It put me in the film business. Two words, be fearless. There it is.
There I couldn't agree more with Clint Eastwood and with you. How does your wife put up, though, with all of this, all these many years, this drive, this craziness?
Well, Bev and I did separate for 7 years, but never got a divorce.
Okay, that's good.
And I, you know, looked around and never found anything
better.
You know, I believe in going with the spirit of your youth, if you can. And things change, as people know that have been married a long time. Things wane, things pick up. You become better friends than you ever were. I think she understands me. You know, you go buy a Rolex watch, for instance, and I did, and I felt bad about it. I don't like wearing $8,000 or $10,000 around on my wrist. She said, "But you know what, Bertie, you deserve it. You work hard for it." And I said, "Okay, then don't ever say a word," but she never has. But the idea of it all is, she understands. I travel internationally a lot. She doesn't go hardly ever. Occasionally. She's been with China with me three times, but I've been there 20 times. It's what I do, but she's very understanding.
So that's the key is to let you be you, I would think.
I mean, I'm approached by women, and I try to avoid that as much as I can. there was a text on my cell phone 3 days ago and it said, "Good night, babe. XOXOXOXO. And she saw it. And it was from one of my agents who really thinks a lot of me, but it's all in friendship. And she kind of got bowed up a little bit bowed up about it. Hair up on the back of her neck. And I went, "It's nothing, babe." And you know what? She believes it. It's true.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that you guys can make it work. So if you work, right? And look at you. You've been around together for a long time. That makes me happy. I want to talk to you also about this. I want to talk to you about the fact you had a knack for being in the right place at the right time, knowing the right people. It's all throughout your career. That fascinates me. And I don't know whether you went out to seek people or there were things just walked into your lap, so to speak. You know, including this when you went to Atlanta and just wound up with the right people. And, you know, when you were able to work with the right people to, you know, birth this first iconic song and the many that followed thereafter. You also ran across some people who I thought were interesting who played a role in your life. And Burt Reynolds is one. You befriended good old Burt?
Yeah, Burt's a good guy. Well, he kind of befriended me. This is a strange story. When I was developing the first album, which is Just Another Day in Paradise, and there were 10 original songs, including Key Largo and Just Another Day in Paradise and Casablanca, which is bigger than
I
all
love
of
that.
My songs.
That's one of my favorite songs too. Yeah.
Like, but it's huge.
Right.
Not in the United States.
Right.
But internationally, I'm talking about the entire Pacific Rim and India and Greece and Russia. I mean, around the world.
You are listening to the Hallie Kasser-Jane Show. My guest today, singer-songwriter, creator of the mega hit Key Largo, Bertie Higgins. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us. Hi, this is Hallie Kasser-Jane. Are you enjoying the show? I hope so. And I hope that you'll tell your friends about it and help us grow our family. How can you help? That's easy. Share the link to the show with your friends or my show's player. And I would love it even more if you'd recommend they visit my website at HallieKasserJane.com. I look forward to seeing all of you there.
All right, moving on. Jim Reynolds became a friend of mine through a doctor friend of mine in Atlanta, whose wife knew Jim was Bert's adopted brother. And Jim worked with Bert on his films as transportation captain. And Bert was shooting a film in Atlanta at the time called Sharky's Machine. And Jim would pick him up every morning from the hotel in the Silver Eagle tour bus that Bert had and force him to listen to my demos of his first album. You know, they were just guitar vocal demos. And just force him to listen to him all the way to the set and back every day. Funny deal. Well, when Key Largo finally hit domestically, Casablanca was number one in Japan. So I was doing my first Japanese tour, and I stopped off in L.A. for the night, ate in an Indian restaurant, and Jim invited me over to the set of The Man Who Loved Women, shot on Rodeo Drive with Bert starring. Good movie, by the way. And I went over and met Bert, and we just shook hands, and he smiled. And I said, good work, blah, good work, blah. And on to Japan I went. Well, a few years later, Bert's secretary called me through Jim in Atlanta, where I was living. She says, can you come down to Jupiter, Florida, where Bert had his ranch, and talk with Bert? He wants to meet with you because he wants you to write some music for B.L. Stryker, the ABC Mystery Movie of the Week, which he was starring in. It was a rotating series. I think Peter Falk, Columbo had one. Then there would be B.L. Stryker. Then there would be one other, and there'd be four rotated every month. So I flew down and met him at Barracuda's at a restaurant there in Jupiter, and we sat and talked for hours. And we got it. He said, you're the best Florida songwriter ever, ever. I said, only Florida? No, I'm kidding. So we met, and we discussed the song he wanted me to put together. So I went back to Atlanta and wrote a song called Palm Beach, about poor boy, rich girl. West Palm is poor, cross the bridge of Palm Beach, rich people. It's like night and day. Well, I gave him writing credit on it, and because of the inspiration, Sonny Limbo wrote some with me, and we wrote Palm Beach. And it ended up on B.L. Stryker, and he featured me on the show with my band in a hotel in the Bahamas. That's how Bert and I became friends. Then I went down and taught he had an acting school down there at his theater. I taught them cabaret singing for 2 or 3 days. Bert taught me a little bit about screenwriting. He was on tour with An Evening with Bert Reynolds the following summer and could not sell out the Fox Theater in Atlanta. But I knew Center Stage, 1,000-seater, where I'd done Bertie Higgins Day with the governor and all that craziness. And I called up Rick and I said, you know, you ought to bring Bert in for An Evening with Bert Reynolds. It was a great show where he just talked and had the set looked like his den, you know, had pictures and films and stuff. And Bert ended up 2 nights there. I saw him again. Then he did the Tivoli Theater in Chattanooga, and I'm sitting in the audience. And he said, ladies and gentlemen, would you bring the lights up? And he said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce a very good friend of mine. You ever heard the song Key Largo? And I'm sliding down into my chair. The lights came up. He came out of character and introduced me, stood me up. But we've been friends ever since. I haven't seen him in a while.
He's a trip of a guy. I mean, he really is. And he's Mr. Florida. What a life, huh? High, low, in between. And that's something that takes me to something that I did want to ask you, and that is about that. When you have a hit as big as Key Largo in the States, huge, huge, massive, right? That's your identity to so many people. Can anything prepare you for that kind of success, that kind of accolade? To me, that would just be like, uh-oh, Because if you get that high, the only place to go is back down that road. I mean, talk to me about that whole period of what was that like?
Well, it scared me to death when it first hit.
Oh, I'll bet.
Because I knew life would change. But I embraced it well. And I've had ups and downs. I went to jail for a while for a DUI. I've had ups and downs. And you know what? It all seems to level out. I tried Key Dog is a hard song to follow up in the charts. Just another name, Paradise, entered the charts with a 40 with a bullet in Billboard. The record company went bankrupt, took my money with them. But you know what? Key Largo is so strong, it still sustains me. It's an amazing thing.
So is it a gift?
Another reason it was driven home to the hearts of America. Scott Shannon was a major DJ at WRBQ in Tampa, and now is at WCBS in New York, major DJ. He became one of the first DJs at VH1, which was the adult contemporary version of MTV. And I'd given him a video we'd shot down in Tarpon Springs of Key Largo, because I had an extra one, and we were out on my boat. And I had an extra one, a 3/4-inch master video. And next thing I knew, he was on VH1, and they had no programming. He burned that damn thing 15 times a day for months.
The video.
Put it up there. So I drove it home. It helped to drive the song into people's hearts.
But this to me is it a gift? But a gift that sometimes can be a real pain in the neck? Because, first of all, like you even just said, it's hard to get past that big a hit. So there's that aspect of it after the initial high. And then, of course, wherever you go, anybody wants to talk to you, they're going to want to talk to you about that when you've done so much more since then.
Yeah, I've written about 200 songs.
Right. It's got to drive you a little crazy, no?
Well, I don't. You know what? It used to. But I don't worry about it anymore. I'm older now, and I'm going, you know, I mean, the thought of a hit record is so far distant from me. I don't even pursue or think. If it happens, it happens. But radio is so different today. It's just different. A lot of good and bad things going on. A lot of payola going on to get songs. Last weekend, they had Bertie Higgins weekend on Sirius or Pandora. And that's all they did all weekend was play my stuff, which was great. But you know what? You never know what's going to happen. You never quit. You never say never.
Well, I think the good thing about that is there are surprises around the corner. That's, you know, that's life. Just when you think there aren't any, then along comes one and you go, wow, look at that. Okay, that's cool.
So there's a process called alpha thinking, which I pursue. Some, not so much anymore. That's responsible for a lot of this success. You can be what you think about most of the time. Very important line. Think about that.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant.
Subconscious believes what it's told. If it's told black is white and white is black, it'll believe it. And it works 24 hours a day. And it opens doors to opportunities that just fall in your lap. But you got to focus on it. You got to think about it. You got to just going to sleep, thinking and pushing it. And a lot of these things have come true exactly the way I saw them. But there's also a thing called beware what you ask for, because you just might get it. And you ask for the wrong things, and you just might get it.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah, that's a big one.
Things become complicated.
Keep your eye on the prize is another way to put that. Let me ask you about this, too. You brought up the video. This is an interesting story. I was talking to your publicist about this, because I didn't know this was true. That in the video, there's the girl in the Key Largo video.
Right.
Her name is Patty.
Patty Rolette, yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me about the original filming of that and the fact that talk to me. Tell the audience the story, because this is lovely.
In fact, we're thinking about reshooting it.
Oh, I love this.
Hey, exactly the way it was shot. I ran into Patty about a month and a half ago. I was doing a show in Orlando. And well, that isn't how I ran into Patty. Let me tell you the story. It's a great story. CBS sent a director down from New York to shoot the Key Largo video, right? The artist who did all the Coke cans, that painted all the Coke cans.
Uh-huh. I don't know the name, but go ahead.
Well, his director came down and went to Tarpon Springs High School to find the love interest in it, and went to the senior class and saw Patty. And first he put his hand, I asked how many people wanted to be in the Bertie Higgins video of Key Largo. A zillion hands went up but hers. And he went and said, "You're the one." She said, "I don't want to do this." So he said, "Please, you got to do this. What do you mean? What do you mean you don't want to do this?" So he went to her parents that night, and her parents talked her into it. Well, the day we shot that video in 2 days, I believe. And the reason she looked so grumpy throughout the thing is we were supposed to shoot the happy side afterwards, and we ran out of time. Even though we did kind of close it out with her and I walking down the beach at the sunset. Well, for years I've gotten emails going, "Who's the girl? Who's the girl? Who's the girl? Great breasts, great breasts." I'm going, "Hey, lighten up, guys." I did a television show about 10 months ago. We did a fundraiser. Well, I'm going on a year now for a policeman that was shot in the line of duty in Tarpon, left behind 7 children and killed him. And the family had no money. So we did a fundraiser. So I was doing Channel 10 local television. I think it's ABC Tampa. It was a noon show, as I remember. And I'm sitting there with my guitar talking to this lovely couple, this woman and a man. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see this person walking onto the set. And I'm going, "What? Who is this?" And up walks Patty 30 years later.
Yikes.
As lovely as she always was. Blew me away. I teared up. I couldn't believe it. So there's the story of Key Largo, how that thing was shot.
I love that. I love that. I'd like to see you guys redo it. It would be really interesting. And a whole new generation could, get a whole twist on this brilliant song of yours. Bertie, this is interesting to me as well. You brought it up a little bit, but I really want to go into it a little bit more. It's funny how the world works. We're international, and yet we're not. You know, the borders are very porous these days. The world, a plane right away. You can go anywhere. You were like this huge megastar in the Pacific Rim in China. What the hell is that?
By the way, the artist's name is Andy Warhol, if I forgot to tell you.
Okay, there you go. You're right. You're right. So, what's it called, Cam? That's so crazy.
It is crazy.
It is.
What, the Pacific Rim success, China?
Yeah. How did I even, I don't get that. I'm trying to get it. Explain it to me. Do you get it?
Well, it's more of that gift. I mean, back in the 80s, Casablanca, you see CBS Sony, parent company of Sony, or what it was CBS, and now it's CBS Sony. When Key Largo hit the United States, they always send over the current albums to the home office in Tokyo, where it's doing with the artist, it's number one. And this young A&R guy, artist and repertoire, named Hilo Yumahara, put the album on a turntable and heard Casablanca. And he went, "Wow, that would do well in Japan." Well, it went number one by me and number two in Japanese by a Japanese artist in the same time. Well, it sat around and kind of bubbled through all the little places over there. It bubbled through the Philippines, South Korea, Thailand, Taiwan, Vietnam, Malaysia, that whole area, Singapore. And it sat around. When China finally opened their doors, they started letting in that music. And Casablanca hit huge. And it's still huge. It's one of the top, probably number two karaoke songs in China. And there's over 800,000 karaoke bars in China. 800,000.
Gosh. So talk to me about this. I mean, is the audience a different kind of audience, or is music truly that universal language? When you're over there and you're playing to them, is it different than playing to an American audience? I mean, there's a huge gamut of questions. I could go down that hole with you because I find it fascinating. What'd you say?
I said Xie Xie, Niao.
Okay. Speak.
That's Mandarin.
Yeah, I got that. I just, define, translate.
Music is music. I sing in English in China.
Okay.
That's what they want me to sing in. And I take my eight-piece band over there and just kick ass. It's amazing. Just 4 or 5 months ago, I did the Beijing International Film Festival with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he and I were the only two round-eyed people there. And there were thousands at this film festival. He and I walked the red carpet together. Just prior to that, I did the Chinese New Year's Gala. I did it 1 year with Michael Bolton. He did one night, and I did the other night in front of 1 billion people watching this television show. It is the largest viewed television show in the world. It is on CCTV. And we did it at the Olympic Stadium where there are 50,000 people sitting in the audience. Now, that's the kind of power I have in China. And I don't know why, but I love it. I mean, I love China. I love the Chinese people. When we do concerts, we sell out 10,000-seat halls. And it's a pandemonium. It's crazy. Whoa. And I'm sad. I did one show down in a city called Sanya, which is on Hokkaido Island, which is tropics. China's got four different zones, so big. North, we've got freezing. In the middle, we've got ho-ho. In the south, we've got tropics. I did it with Condoleezza Rice, of all people. And I'm on the stage the size of a football field, and there's all this LED program lighting going on behind me. And here's this little fart standing there, and I'm going, do I really belong up here? It's crazy. But that's China for me. I've even considered living over there 6 months out of the year.
What is it that you like there? What's the vibe that turns you on over there?
Well, I make a lot of money when I go.
Well, that's nice, too. Yeah.
Plus, I like the people. They're a teenager growing up too fast, and I can see this. I saw it in Japan. Japan fell apart financially. I saw it coming. When two cups of coffee costs $18 at the Tokyo Prince Hotel, you know they're in trouble. China is growing up extremely fast. We better look out for them because they're huge. Their movie industry is second only to us and going to surpass us.
If it hasn't already, right? I mean, because really everything we're even producing in the movie industry, which in my opinion is killing the movie industry, we're producing for China.
You know, the largest film production company there is a company called Wanda. WANDA, they just bought all the AMC theaters in the United States.
Yeah, crazy, huh?
So, but no, I like the people. I like the government, kind of. It's okay.
You don't mind the communism?
95% of the people in China are not in the Communist Party. Only 5%.
Only ruled by.
You got to be invited to get in. I like their family morals. Admittedly, they're not Christian morals, because there are pockets of Christians living in China, and Muslims and Buddhists, all kinds. But I like their family morals, the way the children were raised.
They also have a very interesting, one of the things that I like about China is what they're doing with their young artists, with their children. They, rather than do like we do, where we have kind of this monochromatic education, they find out what their kids are good at and they put them on that track. So if they know that these guys are going to be great ballet artists, then that's what they're...
That's the same with Japan. They train them.
Yeah. It's a much different... I think as far as the arts is concerned, you know, that's a powerful thing that maybe we over here ought to be looking at. You know, we're talking about now getting out of the old way of doing things, you know, so that people have a new career, actually can get out of high school with a career. They actually help them discover way early on what they're good at so that is what they
their
will
gifts,
find.
Where yeah. their gifts lie.
Yeah.
Very
Don't
smart.
You like that? I love that.
I mean, there's nothing like an American gal, I'm telling you. But the Chinese women are wonderful, too. Very respectful. The majority of them don't drink or smoke. They're just raised well and guided. And most of them that I know are very well educated, master's degrees. They don't pay them enough there. And I'm worried that's going to cause problems eventually. Because, you know, give a girl a set of high heels and look out.
That's a song. You want to write that song.
I just wrote one called Belly Button Boulevard.
Well, I don't know about that, but I like the...
It's about Fort Lauderdale Beach. You ever been out Fort Lauderdale Beach?
I grew up all around there, of course.
I call it Belly Button Boulevard.
It's that, too. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I don't see it as a number one record, but I had fun writing it.
No, but I like the girl with the high heels, because, you know...
Yeah, give a gal of high heels and... Run and hide.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't give a lot of time to Sonny Limbo. Should I give more time to Sonny Limbo before we wrap this up? Do you want to give more time?
Sonny discovered the group Alabama and got ripped off by RCA Victor. He sued him and won. Sonny couldn't spell his name hardly, but boy, could he'd come up with great, not great lyrics, but great song ideas from time to time. And bless his heart, he drank too much and died from it at age 43 or 4. But he was a great mentor to me. Bill Lowry, publisher, published 50 household words, names. I like the nightlife, games people play, all the Atlanta Rhythm Section stuff. I mean, so many hits. He had great ears as a song publisher. Couldn't play an instrument. But if you, I remember the day I played key largo for him. I sat on the edge of his desk with my old Giannini guitar and played it. And all 350 pounds, I got up from behind the desk and started dancing. And he says, by God, son, you've finally written one. And he said, if that thing ever gets legs, it'll live forever. That's what he told me. And you know what? The old boy was right.
He was right, huh? I love it. Listen, I heard a great version, this new version. You did a country version of Key Largo, part of what, the Cowboys in the Caribbean album?
And I've got another version of it, a real slow, sexy. I'm singing it with Cheryl Wilson, the girl who did the original background part. We had it all. We had it all on the record. And that was Cheryl's first gig. Now she's one of the top commercial television for singers in the world, actually.
Really?
You'll hear her. She started off with things like, Sears, a softer side of life, stuff like that. That's Cheryl. But she did it with me. I'll send you the sexy version of Key Largo.
Yeah, I want to hear it. I want to hear it. So you're touring. You're all over the place. This is the cutest thing in the world.
Yeah, I'm not doing as many shows as I used to do. I'm doing some shows the next couple of months in Florida. And then where else am I heading?
Well, you're doing Chaco Fiesta on April 8th. That's in Newport Richey. Anybody on...
The Chasco Fiesta.
Yeah, nice, fun, go there. You're dancing on the Tradewinds tour and headliner for the Decades of Rock and Roll. That's going to be a cruise. I wish I could get on that one with you. March 2017.
You need to come along. You'll have a ball.
I might. You never know what I'm going to do.
This is my 8th fan club cruise.
You have a great fan club, by the way.
They're all crazy as hell, but
boneheads.
I love each and every one of them.
Boneheads, I love it.
But I'm crazy as hell, and they love me, I guess. So
I don't know.
I
don't know how crazy you are. You sound like a pretty spiritual kind of guy to me. Are you a pretty spiritual kind of guy?
Well, I pray to the Lord every day. I mean, I'm not a Bible thumper. I won't walk up to you and grab your hand and drop to our knee and say, pray with me. No.
I wasn't even going down the road of God. I was going more literally spiritual.
I believe that there is power that we know nothing about. We try to believe that we know something about, but we don't. Whether there's the all-seeing God, I'm not sure, that keeps his finger on every one of us. That's a lot of work. But, you know, you look at the universe, it doesn't end. Think about how scary that is. We're just a little grain of nasty dirt lying in the universe, sand. I mean, there's a lot going on we don't know about. All I do is follow my hunches, and I follow if something moves me strongly enough, I'll pursue it.
Let's take the spiritual aspect out a little bit, because I think this is spiritual, it's part of karma, which is, and you said it earlier, and it is true, you do give back, and you give to a lot, to a whole lot of different organizations, but one of my favorite, because it saved my daughter, is the Boys and Girls Club of America.
Yeah, I started off with those guys. They're wonderful.
Unbelievable
program.
I don't know
if you mentioned this. I did a charity event in Hong Kong in late December, early January, for handicapped children.
Yeah.
And we raised $500,000. But I'm going to tell you something. Just because they're Chinese don't mean they're not handicapped children. They're handicapped children all over the world.
Right.
So whatever you people that are listening can do, do it. Do it. Because you never know when that circle is going to turn, and it might strike someone very close to you. And that's not all. Just give back. I mean, you know, you've got enough going for yourself, especially Americans. You've got enough going financially. Quit whining about it.
Well, here's another thing that you do that I think is powerfully important, and you know I'm a Florida girl like you, or a Florida guy. You are working on a project in Florida to preserve our fragile endangered wildlife, particularly the brown pelican, and I live on the water. I've seen over the years what's going on, saving other great seabirds.
Ralph Heath is behind that.
I love that.
Bird Sanctuary, and Ralph's been a dear friend of mine for, God, 35 years. We started off together. I start off with him out in the mangroves untangling pelicans from fishing lines and saving them, where they were dying of thirst or food. And we did that. And then I've done a lot of charity events for Ralph over the years that's helping those birds get hungry.
And they get caught in nets, and they get caught in plastic 7-Up, you know, container things. And it just makes me insane. So I'm so glad that you're involved in that, because, I mean, that's just a big problem.
Well, you know what? The developers won't leave Ralph alone. He's got that beautiful property at Indian Shores, which the sanctuary is. And they've been beating him up for years. I just wish they'd stop.
I know. That's one of the big...
So we can build another set of condominiums. Bullish.
I agree with you. And you know, it's a problem in Florida. This is a state of whores and pimps. I mean, you know, when it comes to development, there's just...
Did you say Did you say whores and pimps?
I did.
Good for you.
Why wouldn't I say that? It's the fact. I mean, you know, it's always about the almighty. You know, I grew up here. You grew up here. I mean, I've been here all my life. And, you know, and look what they've done to this place.
You know why you pay a hooker, don't you?
No, tell me, darling, why?
Steve.
God.
Oh, I'm kidding. I got some jokes that'll curl your hair.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Bertie. What a
I've
life.
I've got to write a book.
Yeah, well,
There's
yeah, why don't you? Happened. Why don't you?
I don't know.
You need to write a book.
I'm not sure anybody would be interested in reading
it. Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
An awful lot happened, I'll tell you.
Yeah, it seems to be. Listen, buddy, what a life. What a story. And in the words of a great songwriter who I happen to think I know now, I leave with, you are my hero.
God bless you.
Thanks for sharing your heart, darling. I really appreciate it.
One more thing. All you peeps listening, don't quit. Don't give up. Don't take no for an answer. No means maybe. And maybe always means yes. Give it all you got. In fact, when I die, I'll slide 50 feet because I'll still be running. Put yourself in that same mindset and get to it. There's so much you can do. There's so much you'll regret if you don't do. I guarantee you. Hallie, I've enjoyed talking to you, girl.
Bertie, you're a trip. I've been speaking with singer, songwriter, producer, actor, philanthropist, Bertie Higgins. For more about Bertie, be sure to visit his website at bertiehiggins.com. And to download his music, visit iTunes, Amazon, and his website, where you can become a Bonehead, Bertie Higgins' official fan club. Before I go, I want to remind everyone that podcasts of current and past shows are always available to listen to free on iTunes under The Hallie Cassar-Jane Show. The Hallie Cassar-Jane Show is also available for download via Spreaker.com, Stitcher.com, BlogTalkRadio.com, and a host of other venues. Google The Hallie Cassar-Jane Show, and you will find us. Of course, podcasts of our shows, both past and present, are always posted for your listening pleasure at HallieCassarJane.com. I'll be back next week, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the Hallie Cassar-Jane Show, brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/ The Hallie Cassar-Jane Show. Stay in touch, won't you? Remember, that's HallieCassarJane.com. Discover us on Facebook at Hallie Cassar-Jane and on Twitter at Hallie CJ. I love to hear from you. So, till we meet again, this is Hallie Cassar-Jane. It's a...